This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Mission? For what?
We accidentally built the lunar module. A little too small.
How'd that happen?
Listen, are you good at math?
Yeah.
Do you get a perfect 100 on every test?
No.
Okay. We need a kid like you to test this accidentally smaller version on the lunar surface and soon.
Stan, you're our only hope.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Arvin and Sharmila. It's a bit of a different setup today. We are a two-person show instead of the usual three. So while we wait for Lynn to come back from her super secret space mission to the moon, we thought we'd catch up on some stuff we missed in Apollo 10 and a Half, A Space Age Childhood, which dropped on Netflix in April this year.
So this completely went under my radar until I saw it pop up as a suggested thing on Netflix. And mm-hmm. I'm really surprised because I love Richard Linklater and I love animation. I love anything to do with space exploration. So I'm really glad that we ended up reviewing it. And for all that he's known for a particular kind of filmmaking, this was such a great watch for me. I enjoyed this so much. It has just the right mix of grandeur and nostalgia. A really great weekend watch.
Yeah, so I love this movie a lot, which I kind of expected to enjoy it. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. It's so warm. It's so wholesome. I think it's also important to nutshell this movie because it's ridiculously easy to nutshell. So basically, there's a guy named Stan, voiced by Jack Black, and he is narrating his childhood around the time of the mission to the moon. And he also tells us how he was secretly selected by NASA to go on another mission just a few days before Neil Armstrong and the gang went up there. And that's basically it. That's the story. And I think that it's that simplicity that makes it so special. It's basically a movie that's about nothing, but also about extraordinary things that are happening in the background or around the same time. So it's a trip to someone's childhood, but it's also, it might have a bit of fantasy in it, but I think we let the movie do the rest of the work for you, La.
Yeah, you said trip to someone's childhood. And really, for me, this is about memories, right? It's about how we remember things. I mean, the film isn't very clear on whether he's remembering things the way they happened, even chronologically. It plays around with time. It moves forward and then it moves backwards. None of these things are really clear. And that's exactly how you tend to remember things when you were, I believe he was 9 or 10 when all of this happened. And I love that. I love that the film captures that very particular sense of how certain things are super clear, right? Like the one season TV show that only you enjoyed, or the games that you used to play with the neighborhood kids. But on the other hand, the larger things, you know, the moon landing or how things happened, it's never quite clear whether these are in fact just the way he remembers them or if this is how they happened. And that's fine. I think it kind of reminds you of your own childhood and how you might remember huge significant events, but in a very personal way, and how you might even put yourself into them and remember them through your lens.
Yeah, so I don't know about you growing up, but for me, I always wanted to live in the US when I was a kid. I think a lot of us had that dream, right? It was the place to go. Like, you know, that's where you wanted to be when you grew up. That's where you wanted to have a life. And I think a lot of that was because of movies and TV. Like, we knew so much about their culture, about the media, the people, what life was like there, quote unquote, through all the stuff that they were showing us. So a lot of us had American childhoods by proxy through pop culture, which is a weird and interesting thing, I think. And this movie, more than many other movies, I think bottles that proxy American nostalgia perfectly. I'm not even that age. Like, none of us are in that age. Like, none of us would have grown up in that time, but because it's not the 80s or the 90s, but this movie somehow captures that sense of like growing up during that decade so perfectly that you can sort of relate, even though you have like absolutely no idea what's going on. That there's no way you would have even seen these things if you had grown up in the US during your childhood, which is, I think that's a bit of a flex learn on Richard Linklater's part, that he's able to convey those messages and he's able to show you what his childhood was like, but also take you on that journey in such a personal way.
So there was a bit of a weird dissonance for me, and I don't know if you felt it as well. And I think that might be because growing up in the late 80s, early 90s in Malaysia, honestly was not too different from the childhood that they depict in the late 60s, early 70s there. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, some of the TV shows are different, but the sort of going out and playing in your neighborhood, the relative unsupervised childhood that most children had, doing super dangerous things and not really realizing that you know, you could end up dead doing them just because they're fun. That reminded me a lot of the kind of childhoods that I had, childhood that I had growing up. And I think that might be partly why perhaps people of our generation can actually relate to this because, you know, he keeps saying in the film, I was probably the last generation that did this, or I was probably the last group of children who lived like this. And in some ways, if you were a kid growing up in Malaysia, I think if you grew up in the 80s, 90s, you might have been the last generation of kids to live in that particular way. And so I think that kind of resonated with me quite a bit. The other thing is that I just loved how they realized all of that pop culture in the film. I mean, we've said this, I think, but it is an animated movie. But basically, the movie then animates everything from sci-fi TV shows to Janis Joplin to the Beatles to Sound of Music. And it's great. I love how you see pop culture as memories.
Yeah. And it also gives it that sort of that dreamlike quality because of the animation and because of all the rotoscoping that's going on, which is something I think that we need to expand on and talk about. But I just, you know, you said that it sort of compares itself to the childhoods that we might have had here in Malaysia. And I think that's important because, like, when you become an adult, you realize a lot of things about different countries, and then maybe it's not the dream to go to the US anymore. That's why I said specifically when I was a kid. As an adult, not so much. Like, that's not the, I don't have the quote-unquote American dream. But I think if this movie was about the 90s or the 2000s, which we've seen, it wouldn't have had that sort of dreamy, nostalgic factor. As he says in the movie, it's a kind of an era where nothing happened and then everything happened at the same time. And it's so coincidental that someone like a Richard Linklater, who's so good at these stories, things like Boyhood and so many other projects that he has worked on, because if he was a director who grew up in the 80s or 90s, we wouldn't get this, because I don't think he'd be able to capture that Americana or that, you know, that US-ness in his film.
It's not nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, though, and I appreciate that, right? Like, yes, there's a lot of attachment to this period in his childhood, but there's also a lot of retrograde commentary about how they were so bad with the environment, how again, you know, so many things that they took for granted then, which ended up later affecting the next generations. A lot of commentary on the war, for instance, a lot of commentary on rara Americanism. So the movie doesn't do nostalgia in a sort of everything was wonderful, everything was perfect. It's actually very clear-eyed about the problems of that era as well, and the problems of America as that particular place it had in the world. But very soft push, I think. It doesn't leave you, it leaves you thinking. It also leaves you reflecting a lot on how so many things have changed and yet a fair amount of things are still the same. But I think it also does it with a sort of very soft touch, which leaves you feeling hopeful rather than hopeless.
I think the soft touch is a thing because it's very important when you watch this movie, I think. So I watched it during a long weekend, and it was a very, very chill Sunday, and I had nothing to do, lazy afternoon. So this movie was perfect. I could just absorb the whole thing. I didn't have to think much. I didn't have to turn on my brain. It just happened in front of me, and it was very warm, very cozy and wholesome and stuff. I don't think this movie works if you are, let's say you've had a busy day at work and you want to watch it at night, or you've had a busy week, or you're not in the right frame of mind to watch something like this, then you're watching this and going like, what is happening? Like, it's 1 hour and 38 minutes of what? Like, animation, and this guy is just droning on and on about things that happened in his specific childhood that's very specific to him and his family and his neighborhood. It's very enjoyable. Like, I think it's one of the best things I've seen this year. Like, personally, it's a very, very good film. But it also requires, not a buy-in, but I think it requires criteria on the person, from the person watching. Like, you can't just watch this at any time and expect to enjoy it the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I said at the start, right, like, it's Richard Linklater and all of the stuff that comes with it being a film by him. And of course, that sort of languid taking its time pace is definitely something he does. You have to have patience with a lot of his movies. They kind of take their time, they unfold. Sometimes there are threads that you're not quite sure are going anywhere. I also watched it, I think, at a time when I wasn't sort of rushed for time. I was also excited about this movie because he hasn't done a rotoscope animation in, I want to say, 15 years. So this is
a Scanner Darkly, right? Was the last one.
Yeah, the last one was Scanner Darkly. So I think I already had buy-in, and I think that's important. And whatever that buy-in might be, whether you like space films or whether you like films about childhood, I think it would be good to clear space for this film rather than make it a kind of, I'm going to quickly watch this in between dinner and work or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So we need to take a quick break for some messages, but let us know. Have you seen Apollo 10 and a Half on Netflix? Did you like it? Do you like movies about space travel? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Minus 60 seconds and counting.
Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3.
Stan, are you ready?
1. Ready.
Apollo 10 and a half, this is Houston. Do you read?
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Arvin and Sharmila. We're talking about Netflix's Apollo 10 and a Half, written and directed by Richard Linklater. It mixes real stories of his personal childhood and his time growing up in a certain state in the US with elements of fantasy. We won't say which ones. I think it's safe to say that we both loved it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring up the animation style in this movie and the performances of the animation style, because unlike classic 2D, this isn't 2D hand-drawn animation. It's rotoscoping, right? So instead of cutting down on the performances and just having voice actors, these people actually had to perform. Like, they had to act out all these scenes, and then the animators come in and rotoscope like everything frame by frame by frame. So it's double the work, and it's kind of counterproductive because you're only getting like one a result from one medium. But at the same time, I think seeing the result, you kind of understand why they would opt for something that looks like this, because it looks so traditional, but it also looks so good. Like, the crispness, the movements, the facial expressions, the emotions, they just come off in such a organic way.
That's always the question with rotoscoping, right? Like, why? Why not just do live action? Because if you're going to get the actors to perform anyway, why go with this? Is it just an affect? Are you just trying to be too clever? And I've often thought that with a Richard Linklater, he does it very deliberately. With Waking Life or Scanner Darkly, it was meant to evoke either dreaminess or the state of being, high, essentially. And in this case, it's used for memory. And the technique has also, you can see, improved so much. And he does certain scenes are done in a much more realistic way. Other scenes are done in a lot more of that dreamy, nostalgic quality. So you can see that it's very intentional, and I appreciate that. Worth saying that apparently he initially planned for this to be a live action film. So I found that quite interesting because of how integral I thought the animation was to the story, because I mean, the story is great, but I really think that the animation and the way it looks is such an important part of how you experience that story that I don't think it would be as powerful if it wasn't rotoscope animation.
I also think it's, I don't know if the rotoscoping or the sort of the way the movie looks, that aesthetic, I don't know if that's why the movie wasn't marketed more. Like why wasn't this movie promoted more on Netflix? Like, I remember seeing one trailer. It didn't come out during award season. So it's like, it's somewhere in the middle of the year, like April, like what comes out in April, like big, you know, like big productions. It is a Richard Linklater film. He is a legendary Hollywood name and figure. It looks amazing. It looks awards newsworthy, but it flew under the radar. No pun intended. But and I don't understand why. Like, I was watching the movie and going, like, why do you push other duller movies, you know, not to like sugarcoat it, and not push this when it's, you know, like, was it like, was it too specific? Was it too nothingness, or was it too American?
I wonder whether something like rotoscope animation is actually just very difficult to categorize. Like, who is it for? It doesn't look like it's for children. The animation style is very adult. I mean, a child could watch this, I think. Perhaps a slightly mature child could definitely watch this. There's nothing in it that I think is too racy or difficult for them to understand. However, I think there's a definite maturity to the look and storyline of it that, however, animation is often perceived as being for children. So I think it unfortunately sits in a kind of odd space. Like, who is this actually meant to be for? And, you know, a lot of adults are not partial to animation unless it's really sold to them. Even Pixar struggles with that, right? Like, you're either a huge Pixar fan or you're a person who's like, oh, it's a cartoon. I don't think it's for me.
I also can't imagine this movie coming out in cinemas. Like, just like, because you said, you know, you don't know who it's made for and you don't know who the audience is. Like, is it for kids? Is it for adults? I can't imagine this coming out in cinemas, even though it would have been like really special or really something to see this.
I was going to say, I would have loved to see it in the cinema though.
In the cinema with the kind of music, the score that it has, and just that animation style, it would have been amazing to see this on the big screen. But going back to this movie basically being about nothing, I think that's why it would have looked amazing in the cinemas. But I think because it doesn't qualify to be a cinema movie, it's why it's sort of like just lying separately in a Netflix catalog somewhere, even though it has such huge names attached to it.
I read somewhere that Richard Linklater makes movies that are about everyday slight stories, and that was a compliment in the review that I read, and I completely agree, right? Like, often when we think about movies that are about space, or even movies that are about the first moon landing, they tend to be these grand explorations of, you know, man's achievements and what we want in the future, or they tend to be very political. And I don't think Linklater is interested in making those kinds of films. I think he's actually more interested in celebrating just these tiny moments. And for me, even though I must admit that the entire moon landing sequence was done so well, the film was leading up to it and I was so excited that it didn't disappoint. But that said, the smaller moments, you know, a kid breaking his arm in the playground, or a soda can, you know, being popped open and the tab being thrown on the ground. Those moments are actually equally memorable and equally beautiful, or a teenage girl's reaction to the monkeys. So in the end, I like that the film is actually about emotions overall without prioritizing that one kind of memory or one kind of remembered emotion is worth more than the other. And I think that's important to say, because the movie doesn't prioritize the moon landing over a teenage girl's crush.
There was one article that said that there is literally no villain in this movie, no romance, no conflict, no highs and lows, just a retelling of someone's past. And I don't know how, but it still works so well. And it made me happy in a way that a lot of other movies that have all those things, like have all that excess, couldn't make me the same level of happy, or couldn't give me that same level of satisfaction and sort of that inner, you know, you get that fuzziness when you watch certain movies. This movie did that, even though it had none of the Hollywood tropes. And I don't know if that was done on purpose, because they reference a lot of pop culture stuff in the movie itself, right? I don't know if this movie was trying to be like the opposite of that thing by being so low-key.
So this is what I was thinking when I was watching the film, right? Now is not the best time for Netflix. People are bagging on it quite a bit, and you know, the future looks a little bit murky. Watching this movie made me remember the potential that something like Netflix has. The fact that a movie like this can pop up on a streaming platform, that there's space for a film like this to be discovered. Like you said, I don't know if we still live in a world where a film like this could have made it to the big screens. And made me feel a little sad, really, that we might be coming to the end of that kind of era of taking risks with financing good films.
Would you want to see a bigger studio take on animation like this? That was like my question in closing, because I was thinking, maybe the Disney did this, like a Disney took up rotoscoping and they tried their hand at, instead of a Pixar sort of animation, and they went for rotoscoping, would that make it more mainstream? And I'm thinking it would if a giant studio did it. At the same time, I like the sort of indie feel that these rotoscope projects have, like Undone on Amazon Prime. It's not indie, it's like big budget, but it has that indie vibe to it.
I think it's just even the marketing machine, right? Like you can pour dollars into promoting the film in a particular way, which in itself can be nothing but good. But I do worry that it will take away from that indie flavor. The same way, I mean, Pixar did change after it sort of fully went Disney. I'm not complaining about everything they've done, but you can definitely see a strong commercial interest there, right? So I'm on the fence about it. I can see potential, but I worry that it'll take away the very thing that we enjoy about it.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been talking about Apollo 10 and a Half, A Space Age Childhood, written and directed by Richard Linklater. I think it's safe to say that this is one of the nicest things we've seen all year. So wholesome. I think I've said that like the third time in this review. Keep those messages coming in. We read everything you send us. That number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, and you can write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.